edible insects, why advocates believe all of us ought to be eating bugs. People all over the world eat insects and have for millennia. In Thailand, a specialty dish is jinglied, a deep-fried cricket seasoned with golden mountain sauce. In Mexico, you'll find fried caterpillars, grasshoppers, and ant eggs. Brazil, Australia, China, and Chile all have distinctive traditional recipes featuring insects. Many are considered delicacies. But up till now, entomophagy, or insect eating, has not really caught on in the U.S. Why not? Why is our culture resistant? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with three Mainers who embrace entomophagy and want the rest of us to give it a try. They say insects are plentiful, nutritious, and delicious. They may even share some recipes. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Here at Maine Public, at least, today's topic has had different effects on different people. Some of my coworkers are kind of grossed out. Others are intrigued. Well, that's because today we are talking about entomophagy. Entomophagy, the human consumption of insects. Why gaining bugs is gaining attention. In the studio with me, Drew Desjardins. He is the owner of Mr. Drew and His Animals Too and teaches people about entomophagy. Bill Broadbent is CEO of EntoSense, a company right here in Maine, which raises and sells edible insects and educates the general public about entomophagy. And Zach Pratt, he's the co-founder of, is it Boba?
Boba.
Boba Restaurant in Lewiston, serving Southeast Asian cuisine. As always, we want to hear from you. Would you ever eat cricket fried rice or worm tacos? Do you think that eating bugs will ever become commonplace in the U.S.? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Bill, what does the term entomophagy mean? Does it just mean eating bugs?
Well, basically, yes, eating insects.
And you have founded a company here in Maine. What gives you the idea that this is going to catch on?
Well, actually, it started about 4 years ago. My son asked, why don't we eat insects? Why don't we eat bugs? And I gave him what he calls a typical dad answer, which wasn't enough. And so he kept looking into it, and he came back and started talking about first the health aspects and the fact that they're super, super healthy. Then the environmental aspects, how we can grow so much more in such a small space. And as he did that, our whole family got involved. And in a short period of time, we decided to throw up a website called Bugs for Dinner, which is kind of an educational website. People started asking us, where can we get the bugs? And we put some online, and we've been growing ever since. My sister, who was working for Condé Nast, she quit her job there, and the two of us opened up this company. And we've just finished our third year as a company, going into our fourth year. It's just been growing every single year. We bring in insects from all around the world, and we sell all around the world.
Okay, that's great. I have to ask you, how old was your son when he started you on this path?
13 at that time.
Okay, he must be pretty proud now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then before I get to our other guests, what kind of insects do you sell?
Oh, all types from, crickets are probably one of the most popular. But chapulinas, which are roasted grasshoppers from Mexico, they compete because people love the flavor. Over 200 insects are eaten in Mexico. Our southern neighbor loves them, and we're missing out.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Drew, tell us, give us the nutritional pitch for eating insects.
Well, I work a lot with younger children, and for me, the education starting at a young age is really where it's important. Trying to get an adult to change their mind on this is hard. After all these years, we've been taught that bugs are bad, disgusting, put bug spray on, we don't want to get the bed bugs biting us, whatever. So working with the younger children, it's easier to explain to them. And what I really like is the fact that they're open-minded as compared to an adult, but they also understand a lot more than people realize. And so as I explain the benefits of it and how some bugs actually take on the flavors of the food they eat, like, for example, mealworms are very nutritious and they have a very wonderful flavor complex. You can actually make them taste like oranges a little bit by feeding them certain foods. And, you know, so you can really control the flavor. And for a kid, that's amazing. And when we get them to try a bug, whether it's live or in cookie form or something like that, they're always like, wow, you know, they're more open-minded about it. Of course, I have to explain to them also, you can't just go and eat any bug. I mean, I don't want you getting, you know, sick from something.
Are there bugs here in Maine that one could get sick from eating?
Yeah, there's some insects you'd want to be, obviously, anything that would sting you would not be a good choice. There's certain ones that you'd want to watch out for, maybe due to allergic reactions.
And pesticides.
What's that? Yep. And pesticides, that's true. Yeah, very much so the case is because we spray so many chemicals around that, if they're just catching wild bugs with not knowing the source, pesticides are a big issue. So, like Bill, he farms them. He actually raises them. And I raise my own bugs for my animals, but we use them for food as well.
So, Zach, are bugs on the menu at Boba?
Bugs are not on the menu at Boba as of yet, but it is a movement we are going to be taking. Drew and Bill have approached me several months ago about doing a pop-up night, about doing a three-course dinner of including bugs and some classic Southeast Asian food. And honestly, our community has tasted some of these awesome bugs, from the Cipollinas to some mealworms. They actually took a great approach to it. They're actually loving it. They like the excitement. I got a lot of awful reactions, but I also got a lot of good reactions. Believe it or not, the college students are very receptive to this movement. They're all about it. A big customer of mine is Bates College in Lewiston, Maine, also USM as well. I'm also getting a lot of older folks. You just got to tell them, describe what the taste tastes like. Tell them what is it presenting. Is it more salty? Is it a little bitter? You know, if you tell them what that flavor is, they will try it.
So, Zach, as a chef, at what point in your culinary training were you introduced to insects and how to cook them and different dishes with them?
So I was introduced to bugs probably about 4 or 5 years ago when me and my co-founder of my company went to a couple of her family parties, and they introduced me to actually grasshoppers, and it was actually stir-fried with oyster sauce and garlic and like some chili oil. And I was like, what is this? And I was like, I'm not eating
this. This was
that.
Here in Maine?
This was here in Maine, yeah. The co-founder is actually, her families are refugees from Thailand and Southeast Asia. And I was like, I'm not eating that. And I was like, no way. But then I was like, well, what do I have to lose? I tried it. It was super yummy. I mean, it tasted better than like stir-fried string beans, honestly. It had some depth to it. It had some umami flavors and saltiness and bitterness. It was just wonderful. And then I got this wonderful opportunity with Drew and Bill a couple months ago, and I said, let's do something with it. Let's get Maine known. Let's make them aware of what we're doing, and whether it be in Portland, Maine, Waterville, it doesn't matter. Let's just get people known in Maine about eating bugs.
So do you all have a date yet when your pop-up night is going to be?
We're not. We're going to cohesive with each other and talk about it, and probably in the next month or so. I mean, that's ideal. We all have a lot going on with our businesses.
I was just going to say, right now all of us are booming. And it's crazy.
Right. Oh, this is great. So Bill, what are the most popular items that you sell? And where are they going? Are they going to restaurants? Are they going to home cooks?
Yeah, we actually have quite a few restaurant customers, and Cipollinas and the black ants are the two biggest with them. Obviously, Mexico restaurant, I think I mentioned, you know, in Mexico, there's 200 different insects that they eat. They love them.
Mexican restaurants around the U.S. are your big customers. Okay.
Right. We have 4 restaurants in New York City. And Cipollinas and tacos and burritos. The other is the black ants. They love the fact that they're black and they're little tiny pieces. You can't really tell that they're insects, but they have a really strong lemon-lime flavor, you know, very citrus flavor, and they're very popular. Then as far as other customers, you know, we have everybody from bodybuilders who like the cricket powder to just all sorts of people. A lot of them are ethnic-oriented because they're used to it from where they came from, where their families are used to it. But then there's also a lot of, especially younger people, who are just trying it out, and we get a lot of repeat customers. They, you know, once they try a little bit, they just keep coming back.
Okay, so we touched on this a little bit before, Drew, but I want to expand on it a little bit before. We've already established that people eat insects all over the world, from Southeast Asia to Mexico to parts of Australia to South and Central America. Why do you think Americans don't? Or obviously a lot of Americans do, but traditionally has not been a part of our food culture.
We, as a culture, we have kind of went our own way, I think, back if you look in the 1800s and stuff like that. We got into big farming and cattle and stuff like that. We had open space, open land, so food became very accessible. People just drove that way. I'm sure in the beginning when settlers first came here, you know, they didn't know what was going to be available. And some of them probably did come with insects to some degree. So I think there was a change along the way, and we just kind of put it all aside. I often use an example of rabbits. Back, you go when grandparents, you know, before supermarkets were invented in the 1940s, people raised their own chickens and rabbits and things like that. And then we got supermarkets, all that phased out. Nobody was doing it anymore. So we kind of went with just packaged food, and nobody was packaging the insects. And again, a lot of it is Southeast Asian, African cultures. So the predominant European cultures weren't big on insects as much as other cultures were.
A lot of people believe that insects, I mean, you know, that we have this population in the world that's growing and growing, and that insects are part of the solution for the future. Bill, you're nodding. I mean, this is what I'm reading.
Yeah.
It seems counterintuitive because insects are so small. You have to eat a whole lot of them to get your tummy.
Well, I like to mention that by the time my kids who are teenagers right now are my age, there's going to be half again as many people on the planet. And because all these evolving cultures look to the West and say, hey, I want to have hamburger and steak, we're going to have to over double the meat production. And there's just no way we can do that. There's just not enough land. Right now, agriculture uses most of the arable land and a lot of the, you know, clean fresh water as it is. So there has to be something that's going to happen. And this is the answer. I mean, there's all sorts of other things. We were just talking about, you know, different areas. Europe's ahead of us on this. Europe has insects in their grocery stores. They have bug burgers. They have more restaurants than we do. Canada, Kroger's largest supermarket chain, carries crickets and cricket powder. And so the United States is just trying to catch up.
Yeah, and we're looking at, what, by 2050, the estimation is 10 billion people on this planet. And so we start looking at the usage of land that we need, homes and buildings and structures, and then, again, the agricultural and the farming. You can only take so much because people, you know, people are concerned about animals and all that stuff. And, again, that's part of my program. But, you know, we're taking that land from them. So here it is, we get all these, like in Lewiston, for example, empty mills. We can't raise cattle in those mills, but we can sure raise a lot of insects. And it's that large number and that quick reproduction, because one cow, 3 acres of land, needs lots of food, water, produces one calf, it takes a year to grow. It's a slow process. Insects turn over quickly. And again, it's not going to be like you're eating a plate full of bugs. It's going to be processed into the food for the proteins. The bug burgers they make, it's no different than looking at a veggie burger. It looks like a hamburger.
You all brought some chips with you. Chirps.
Yes. Yep. Chirps chips are
And I tried
wonderful.
One of them, and I couldn't tell that there was a cricket in the chirp.
Yeah, we brought Chirps chips, and we also brought Chipotle energy bars. And both of them were on Shark Tank, and both of them had Mark Cuban invest in them. So that's just one, you know, Mark Cuban believes this is one of the next big things. Indra Noonan, who is the CEO of Pepsi, said the next big snack food is going to be crickets. And she said, and I'm not talking about the game crickets, I'm talking about bugs.
Okay, well, speaking of reality TV, Zach, you were just on, or you just participated in Chopped, I hear.
Yeah, that was a crazy, crazy experience. That show will be airing July 3rd at 9 p.m. You'll see some fierce competitors, myself. See some charisma from me. You'll see some of myself. You'll be seeing some Southeast Asian flair in that Chopped kitchen, and I hope you guys all enjoy. Please come out to my restaurant in Lewiston, Maine. That would be awesome. Boba.
I know you're not allowed to tell who the winner is, but there were bugs in your episode, right?
I plead the fifth on that one, but there was some crazy ingredients in there. Yes, there was, but you'll see on the episode, and hopefully you guys enjoy the show.
Okay, so I'll ask a broader question. In the culinary world, is this a discussion that's going on? When chefs get together, are they talking about boy, when is the audience? When are my customers going to be ready for this? When is this going to become mainstream? Or not really?
Honestly, not really. I think that's a discussion I've been starting to bring up now that I've been exposed to it. The restaurant industry is growing quickly. I mean, there's like 500 and something restaurants in Portland, Maine throughout. I mean, how many restaurants are doing the prime cuts in these restaurants? I mean, how... Just think about in like 10 years where the restaurant's going to be and how many people are going to be going out to eat. If we can supplement those meats with bugs, we might be able to take a step back from how much meat we do eat. So I agree on anything that's, you know, can supplement, you know, the sustain things. I'm all about sustainability, you know, especially vegetation as well. I'm all about it. So
I should mention that the Research Chefs Association just a couple months ago had a whole session on edible insects. And that was 2,000 chefs from many of the top restaurants. And they're called research chefs because they're coming up with new dishes. And, you know, it was highly attended. It was standing room only. And there's been a huge fallout from that with chefs calling up saying, you know, they want these different. Many of them are some of the basics, but some of them are looking for mopani worms. I mean, they have specific dishes that they want to make. And so I think over the next few years, you're going to see a lot of it.
Okay, so... Before we go to a break, I want you guys really quickly to tell me about some of the characteristics of some different insects. Before the program, I tried ants that one of you brought, and I was surprised that they were a little citrusy, kind of lemon-lime thing going on. So what's something else that might surprise someone?
Well, mealworms. You were saying no because you have a leopard gecko you feed
them
to.
I have a gecko, and I just the gecko eats mealworms and crickets, so
and,
I can't go there.
Yeah, amazingly, I've had at my programs children trying live ones. And I ask them what their thought is. What do they think? And we get tastes like corn to a nutty flavor. But they're all about it. They're amazed that it's actually rather tasty.
Okay. And are these live mealworms?
I do both live and cooked. the live actually has personally a better flavor. The live, it's like eating a corn kernel. It's got kind of that same snip and pop.
Okay, Phil, what about you? Sell us on an insect.
My favorite, believe it or not, is katydids because they taste like pistachio nuts. But we've only been able to get one small batch of katydids. Everything we carry has been raised for human consumption. So specialty insects are a little bit tougher, but mopani worms, those are great. They have a real umami taste, unlike anything I've ever had, but they taste very good. And almost any ant. You know, you tried the black ants. There's also the weaver ant has kind of a sweet taste. And again, it's hard to explain. We try to say it tastes like, but there's 2,000 different bugs people eat, and every bug tastes different. So this is the greatest culinary challenge of our lifetime.
Okay. Zach, what about you?
Honestly, the first time I ever tried something that Bill brought in to me was, I believe it was a silkworm. It almost tasted like chicharrón, like the crispy pork skin. Or like when you get in Mexican restaurants, it was awesome. I mean, it was like super like, it was like porky tasting and like just delicious. And it had that savory taste. Also, he brought another one that was similar, but it had a slight different note to it. It kind of tastes like a walnuts or burnt popcorn on the back of the throat, which was really good.
I remember watching you eating it, and the eyebrows just went up.
Yeah.
I could do a lot with this.
So we need to go to a break, but afterwards we're going to bring in our brand new intern, Celie, and she's going to do some live sampling on the air and tell us what she thinks of the insect she's tasting. And also, we'll take your calls and questions. We're talking about eating insects, and I don't mean critters eating insects. I mean humans. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Portland Food Co-op, a community-owned market featuring a wide selection of local and organic products, open to everyone 7 days a week. And Sweetser, offering services even when school is out, including support for mental health and eating disorders. Learn more at sweetser.org.
A long-time activist and organizer, Cecile Richards was at the helm of Planned Parenthood for more than a decade. She'll talk to Mina Kim about growing up in a political household and the future of reproductive rights. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
That's coming up tomorrow afternoon at 2:00. Mainers go to the polls tomorrow to determine local races, the future of ranked choice voting, and choose the nominees for the Republican and Democratic gubernatorial primary contests, and the Democratic nominee for the second congressional seat. If you are looking for information before you hit the voting booth, our Your Vote 2018 election online is open for business. There you'll find the primary debates, candidate interviews, and comparisons, information about ranked choice voting, including a link to the Maine Calling Program with Secretary of State Matt Dunlop, the latest election news, and more. Please visit mainepublic.org/yourvote or click on the Your Vote 2018 banner on the mainepublic.org homepage.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about eating bugs, entomophagy. Joining me, Bill Broadbent, the CEO of EntoSense, which sells edible insects and promotes entomophagy, and his company is right here in Maine. Zach Pratt is co-founder of Boba Restaurant in Lewiston, and Drew Desjardins is an educator and owner of Mr. Drew and His Animals Too. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Celie, our brand new intern, is here with us. And Celie, is this what you expected when you came into work this Monday morning?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
This is what you thought your experience at Maine Public Radio would be.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to go in and eat some bugs live on radio. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for being a good sport. And Bill, tell us what you're going to give Celie.
Well, we're going to start out with roasted crickets.
All right.
And these have...
Okay, I'm just going to pop a couple in. Wow.
What do they taste like?
It's kind of like a mix of a sunflower seed and, like, not sure, like, roasted nut. It's delicious.
Okay, really, and like, does that. It look, the fact that this is not baked into a chip or something, it looks like a cricket.
It's a full cricket. Yep, now that I'm looking at it up close.
But yeah. It doesn't bother you. It tastes good enough.
No, it tastes good, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a little weird. I just think if you think about it too much, you might get caught up.
Okay. Are you going to give her something else?
Yeah, we do like to mention, if you ever looked at a cow in the face and said, boy, she looked delicious.
Oh. So well, you can say that about a lobster.
So we're going to go to black ants. And as we mentioned earlier, these have been a favorite of many.
Okay. Mm, those have a very surprising lemon flavor. Yeah. Wow.
It's not what you'd expect.
Yeah, not
is
what
it?
I would expect. Huh. That's really interesting.
Do we have one more?
And we have the cricket chips.
Cricket chips.
And these are the way a lot of the different foods will come along, and that's using cricket powder. So you don't even see or know that there's crickets in them.
But it adds protein.
It adds protein and a lot of other vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. Okay. If I didn't know that had crickets in it, I would never tell at all. That was delicious. Yeah.
And well, of course, if you want to finish off, we have the cricket crunch.
Oh, with dessert, yes, so, yes, cricket chocolate.
Crickets covered in chocolate.
Awesome.
Which looks like a chocolate bar that has nuts or something in from this distance.
Yeah, it's just a crunchy chocolate bar.
Yeah. Well, Celie, thank you for being our guinea pig.
Thank you.
And,
that was really fun.
And giving us your honest, it's your honest assessment, right? You're not just being nice, right?
Yes, no. It's a little unsettling in the moment, but, I mean... I'd eat it again. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. Is this a typical reaction, Bill?
Under 40, yes. Over 40 is a little more difficult.
Well, I'm over 40 and I tried the ants. So I'm going to pat myself on the back right now. I'm going to start.
As you should.
I'm going to start with a tweet from Susan. How would you classify eating bugs in current gastronomic terms? Low carb, paleo, vegan, other? I don't think they're vegan. What about you, Zach? How would you call them?
Honestly, low carb, I think. I mean, I think you can eat a lot of them without gaining any calories and, you know, keeping a little firm in the middle. But, I mean, low carb, I would say. What do you think, Bill?
Well, they're very paleo, no doubt about it. They've been around since the beginning.
I always ask that when people, I'm on the paleo. I'm on the paleo diet. Oh, really? You're eating bugs? No.
All right. We'll go to Henry, who's calling from Otisfield. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm an over 70 eater of bugs. Ah,
awesome.
When did you start?
I'm a fellow of the Explorers Club, and we meet in New York every March and feast on a great variety of bugs and other unusual meats. Also, I lived in Africa for 7 years, where I learned to really appreciate certain
things. Yes, a great exposure there.
Yes, and I would like to share some of them with you. For example, I was sitting at the edge of the Sahara Desert when a swarm of locusts came through, and my assistants captured them, steamed them, and I sat there in the Sahara Desert swearing that I was eating Gulf of Maine crab.
I'm getting hungry.
Another favorite was when it came time for the termites to mate. The sky was full of them. And my favorite form of the termite was just softly fried, and they tasted like almonds. But then there is the creme de creme, and I experienced this at the Explorers Club, and that is baked cockroaches.
Oh, I often say that with the cockroaches, the Madagascar hissing cockroaches. I'll often say they're crunchy on the outside and creamy in the middle.
That's right. I didn't eat the outside. What happens when you bake them, the exoskeleton gets quite hard, and the inside turns to liquid. And you bite the end of the tail off, you squeeze, and you suck the juice out, and it is liquid lobster.
Well, Henry, thank you so much for sharing. Do you order insects and cook them at home?
I don't, but when I go abroad, I travel quite a bit. I find them, but I'm delighted to hear that they're now maybe available here in Maine, and I'll be checking those out. By the way, someone says we don't serve plates of bugs. I prefer my bugs unadulterated. I will eat a plate of bugs.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Henry, and sharing your culinary favorites. We're going to move on to Cape Rozier and George. Hi, George. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, I'm just calling. I raise bugs myself. They live in my closet. I raise mealworms, and they're really tasty, really low maintenance. And I just want to let people know that they can grow their own bugs in their closet really, really easily. And mealworms are an excellent choice because they don't jump or fly or anything.
Yeah, and that's the nice thing about it is because it's like feeding chickens or whatever. You know what you're giving them, so you know what they're eating, which makes a big difference as compared to getting something outside where you don't know what it's been into or eaten or pesticides. So by raising your own, yeah, you control their feed and their flavor.
George, how do you cook them? Or do you?
I usually toast them in the toaster oven. I haven't tried eating them live yet, but after listening to the show today, I might probably going to go eat one right after this. But
great.
But yeah, I usually toast them in the toaster oven, and they just kind of turn into little Rice Krispie type things, and they're delicious.
Okay, George, what you could also do is go try one right now and call us back.
Okay.
Try. You could also use them in cookies and baking and stuff like that. Scrambled eggs, whatever. You got a lot of use for mealworms and such.
Thanks, George, for calling in. We'll go to Mark calling from Portland.
Hello?
Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Thank you for accepting our calls. I love this topic. I'm 68. The last 11 years I spent over in China and Southeast Asia and through Mexico and down to Central America as far as Nicaragua. When I went to Asia, I had some experience before going there with bugs as a child. I raised chameleons, and you feed them mealworms. Curiosity killed the cat, but the mealworms that I ate didn't. They weren't particularly tasty because I ate them raw, me and my chameleon, Skilmarooch. And then later on, I got into survival camping, and I learned to not only eat earthworms, they make great soup, but to eat bugs. Cook what I could catch, mostly grasshoppers. Then when I was almost out of high school, one of our previous graduates came back from being overseas, and to impress the girls down at the Dairy Queen, he picked a moth off the wall under the nighttime light and just munched it. He made a big impression on me as well as the women. Then I had the great good fortune to go to China back in 2006. And in addition to duck tongues, chicken feet, and pig ears and butts. They eat a lot of things we don't usually eat. And when I saw on a 5-star restaurant menu silkworm larvae, I couldn't resist. I ditched the vegetarianism, and I'm not looking back. I've eaten in Southeast Asia palm beetle larvae, grasshoppers and crickets, stir-fried, packaged, and made available at the checkout counter in every shop. You can buy them in little bags like candy, and they're wonderful, good nutrition.
Well, Mark, thanks for calling and sharing. And Zach, his point he made about it's not just that Americans don't eat insects like many parts of the world. There are a lot of things people eat in the rest of the world that Americans turn their nose up at, aren't there?
It's very true. My favorite delicacy is the classic chicken feet. A lot of people here will not eat chicken feet. They're gelatized. They're very glutinous. They have claws on them. You just got to know how to eat them safely. But other things like pig ears and snout, those things are starting to make a come in local restaurants, especially amongst the ethnic restaurants throughout Maine now. And you'll see it in New York. New York restaurants are already starting to make a come with a lot of these non-edible, non-edible substances and foods.
Drew, you want to jump in?
Well, yeah, and I'm always amazed, too, when I talk about eating insects and stuff like that, that people are all, ooh, disgusted and stuff like that. But then, like, let's stop and look at the processed food you're eating and what's actually in that. That stuff there, I mean, you got chemicals and preservatives and stuff like that. At least bugs are all natural.
Of course.
It's healthier for you than some of the canned stuff that we eat.
Okay, I'm going to go to a Facebook post from Felix. I had previously read that earthworms can taste like bacon. So do you know how to cook them? Anybody here an earthworm specialist?
No, not me. I've swallowed a few live, but I tend to be more the live guy. You know, some things are just better served alive.
You're going to have to find out elsewhere unless you would just want to eat them live. Do they taste like bacon live?
No.
No, okay. No. What do they taste like?
Dirt. Yeah. The honest, raw truth.
I believe the proper term is earthy.
Earthy earthworms. Gregory on Facebook says, weren't chocolate-covered ants a popular snack in American days of yore, or is that just something I was teased about as a kid of the 70s? Gregory, now that you say that, I seem to remember something about chocolate-covered ants.
Yeah, they were popular, and that was kind of, I always say, like, crickets are the gateway drug, but that was gateway bug. Sorry, slipped off there. But anything chocolate covered is more right. willing to be eaten, I think, you know. So it's just one of those things, you know. But
yeah,
you probably sell more chocolate covered things than anything else, I would
think,
for novelty aspects.
The Cricket Crunch Bar, without a doubt, is a top one.
Yeah. Is that what Seeley tried, the Cricket Crunch Bar?
Yes.
Okay. Gregory, thanks for your post. We'll go to Jackie, who's calling from Eaton, New Hampshire. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, hi. Thanks. This is a fun program to listen to. I just had a question. I've been hearing and reading a lot about pretty significant declines in insect populations around the world, and I'm curious if any of your guests might address how that is affecting this industry. Thanks.
Yeah. You want to go, Bill, first? Or?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of it is because of pesticides and stuff that we're using, to protect our crops, all that stuff. So we're wiping out insects, including things like honeybees and such, at a large rate. Fortunately, the insects that are used for human consumption are farm-raised, so it would really be no different than raising cattle or chicken. Well, a little bit different, but nonetheless, you know, it's farm raised, so we're not really taking a wild population of insect. We're raising them because they grow quick, they're easy to breed, they breed quickly, they produce quickly, they don't take that space. So, but basically, it's due probably a large part to the agricultural aspect of things, using chemicals to protect our crops. And therefore, you know, some of us don't wash our food first and we eat those pesticides, but that's why the insects are suffering.
And it could be similar to, what's happening with the bee population. Right now, because of honey, we have all these people that are raising bees. And so even if the wild populations are having trouble, we're replenishing it from the bees that we're raising. So there's a possibility that that would happen here too, but the kind of insects that we're seeing decreasing is just too vast in numbers for the farming, I think, at this point, to really help. I think we have to have some other solutions, and hopefully we'll find those soon.
All righty. Let's see. Shirley on Facebook says, my husband says he tried crickets when he went to Tanzania about 5 years ago. He said they were not bad, though he has not been able to convince me, LOL. Convince Shirley that her husband's right and that crickets are good. You call them the gateway bug.
Yeah. Crickets really are the starter bug for a lot of people. And I don't know if it's just because they're readily available. But again, it goes back to being open-minded and having not to look at it as a bug. Because if you look at a lobster, everybody loves lobster, and it's the hideous-looking creature on the face of the planet. I mean, who was the first person that sat there and said, let's eat that? You know, it's just, it's a big bug. And so if we look at things a little differently and just, again, put it out of our mind that it's something that we were taught that's bad and disgusting and filthy and gross, and start looking at it a little differently, we might find out that, oh, it is actually pretty good.
Okay, so we do have to take a quick break. First, a word about tomorrow's program. We will hear ideas for things to do this summer and around Maine. Events, getaways, family activities, and more. If you would like to email your favorite summer activity or destination or send us questions, do so ahead of time. Meantime, we're talking about eating insects. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet us or post to Facebook. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. And Ocean View at Falmouth, an active retirement community offering independent apartments, cottages, and a care continuum. OceanviewRC.com.
On the next Fresh Air, the powers, perversions, and potential of heredity. New York Times science columnist Carl Zimmer tells us how current state-of-the-art genetic research can help us understand the absurdity of racism, change the genetic makeup of an embryo before it's implanted, and potentially eliminate some diseases. His new book is She Has Her Mother's Laugh. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we have World Affairs. We'll have a discussion on the current political situation in Europe, where populist governments have gained power. Italy is joining Hungary and Poland in flouting Europe's traditional liberal democratic values, and there is talk of abandoning the euro. That's World Affairs coming up at 2 o'clock in just a few minutes right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Entomophagy, the Practice of Eating Insects. Joining me today, Zach Pratt, who is co-founder of Boba Restaurant. Drew Desjardins is owner of Mr. Drew and His Animals Too. And Bill Broadbent is CEO of EntoSense. Join our conversation. Our number 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Joshua, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hi there. How's everyone doing?
Great.
Great.
Good, good.
Excellent. I'm a master's student at the University of Maine, entomology master's student, and we started a club called the Maine Entomology Student Organization, and we do several events, workshops for children. We did it 2 years in a row, actually, for the 4-H at UMaine program, edible insect workshop, and we opened the eyes of a lot of these students, and they're actually, some of them ate some live mealworms as well. You guys were talking about it earlier, so it was pretty cool to see that they were open to the idea of it, and actually some of them, most of their families have farms, and some of them have small little tiny insect farms just for their chickens, and they'll be raising mealworms or some black soldier fly larvae. And it's just pretty incredible. A lot of them actually already tried eating insects. And they're like, I asked them when we got together, there was about five. Last year we had about 13, a little, probably scared them the first time. The second round, a lot of them had already eaten insects, and it was pretty incredible to see that the younger generation is doing this now.
Joshua, do you have a favorite insect to eat?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually the giant water bug, Bellus stomatidae is the family name.
Oh, toe biters.
One time, yeah, the toe biters. I was out camping with a buddy of mine, and we found some along a little river. I know you guys talked about not collecting and eating them, but, you know, we're entomologists. We know what we're doing.
Trained professionals.
Yeah. And we went on ahead and boiled it in a little can that we had, and it just tasted like avocado ranch, warm avocado ranch. And that's pretty good stuff.
Now that's very descriptive.
Joshua, thanks so much for calling in. We'll go up to New Brunswick and Jared. Hi, Jared. Go ahead.
Hey there. I'm listening to all you guys talk about this, and nobody's mentioned the cost yet.
Okay. So, Bill.
How much would it cost? And especially for you guys starting out, surely it's got to be profitable.
So what is – so you're talking about if you wanted to order some insects, what might it cost you?
Exactly. If I wanted to do retail or if it's going to eventually end up on a menu, what would that price look like?
Well, of course, if it's on a menu, it depends on the other ingredients and such. But we start out with a lot of sample packs of like chapulinas and crickets are around $5. Crickets and chapulinas are about $40 a pound right now, and that in a sense is – expensive, but it's partially because it's a new industry. The more the demand, the lower the price will go down. But to give you an idea of what's going on with the demand, right now there's a company called Entomo Farms that's in Ontario and Canada, and they at the moment have 60,000 square feet of cricket farming space. They're opening up another 20,000 as we speak, and they just got another deal to open up another 100,000 square feet over the next year. So they'll be getting close to 250,000 square feet just growing crickets. As that happens, the price is going to start coming down.
Are some things much more expensive than others? I mean, is there the caviar of the insect world that you're going to expect to pay a lot of money for?
Black ants, because of their size, they are very expensive. They're about $280 a pound. But you get so many of them, and you only need a very small amount for each dish. So it really depends. Scorpions. Right now, we're selling 250 scorpions for $200. They're very popular for scorpion shots. So a lot of restaurants are buying them. We have red-headed centipedes, and I think they're about $20 each.
So scorpion shot, what does one put a scorpion into?
There's two things we use that bars like a lot, and that's we have these little Manchurian scorpions that go in the bottom of the shot. And then we have sal de gusano or sal de chapulin, which is salt made out of the gusano worm or the grasshopper. And that used to be tradition, or still is tradition in Mexico, to salt the rim of mezcal glasses. Now we do it with margaritas, of course. But right now there's a lot of bars and taverns that are doing scorpion shots rimmed with the sal de gusano salt.
And these are not live scorpions?
No, they're not.
Okay, good.
They're dry.
Jared, does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much. I actually saw a scorpion on a skewer when I was in Thailand for $1.
Wow, great deal.
Jared, thanks for calling in. We'll go to York and Maggie. Hi, Maggie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's a wonderful conversation, but I think of all the people starving in the world. Is this a viable thing? I know you're all business owners and introducing it to Maine, but is it a viable way to feed starving people in the world? It seems inexpensive, takes less space, and any thoughts on that?
Actually, when I do my programs, that's one of the things I bring up, is that this is a way we're looking at solving world hunger, is because it is, again, space is very, you don't need a lot of space. You don't need acreages of land. You need one building and you can raise billions of insects. And so very easily, once this catches on, yeah, it might be the way to go. And we're learning how to cook and process them differently so that, you know, again, you can get them now in Europe that look like hamburger patties. You know, so there's ways to prepare this and package it and market it. But I mean, yeah, for world hunger, that's a big, big thing. The World Health Organization and a lot of different organizations are looking at is the usage of insects.
This is actually an international movement. We're in the hardest of all markets. But for example, Vietnam has a big program going on right now. The cassava leaves that the farmers used to burn, they're now taking trucks around that are dropping off like mini farms with crickets. And so the farmers now feed the crickets the cassava leaves, and then they'll come pick up the last batch and bring in a new batch. Right now, Cambodia's number three export is insects into Thailand because it's become so popular in Thailand. C- Korea has a big edible insect push, and China just had the largest edible insect convention in the world. So it's not just here. It's just that we're the most squeamish.
Sounds like we have some traveling to do.
That's right.
We'll go to Dana, who's calling from Liberty. Hi, Dana. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just being a little pedantic here about the what you're calling bugs. True bugs are Hemipterans, which yes. is a suborder of Homopterans. And I don't mean to be a poop in that regard, but
no. And yeah, I know what you're saying because I do that sometimes when I'm speaking to older courses or children or adults is that, yeah, insects is mainly what we're talking about. There are only, what, three species, I believe, of true bugs or something like that. Yeah, right. So a lot of people, but what happens
piercing,
is
sucking mouth parts.
Yeah, and what happens is, though, is you know, adults, we kind of just generalize and say bugs. It encompasses it all. But you're right. The insects is what we're mainly talking about. Though one of the bugs is actually used for food coloring in carmen, which is a beautiful red color. And the Aztecs have been using it forever. And that insect they use for dyes and stuff. And it's common in our food. And it says carmen on the thing. A lot of people don't realize that's actually an insect.
So if you see carmen on ingredients.
Yeah, there's a couple others.
And we're talking about insects, but we're also talking about arachnids, and we're also talking about things like
correct.
Grubs. Yeah, so Dana, thanks for calling in. We're going to go to Virginia, who's calling from Standish. Hi, Virginia, go ahead. Virginia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Hi, I grew up on a farm in northern Minnesota, and I grew up eating chicken feet. And pork hocks, the whole animal, and I think maybe other people did the same thing, pig's feet, pickled pig's feet, and so on. Maybe other people on farms in northern Maine did the same thing, older people. I just thought that might be pertinent to your discussion today, that weren't all so squeamish about what we ate. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you, Virginia. And that was your point, right, Zach?
Yeah. I mean, we're just so reluctant to eat so many prime cuts of everything. I mean, we just throw it away. My restaurant's known for pho. We use a lot of the backbones. We use a lot of the knuckles. We use all that to make it into a nice collagen-style soup. And honestly, bone broth these days has become very popular. It's popular amongst many communities now. People are looking for more nutritious foods and that haven't been processed. And I think that's going to be a huge movement as long with bugs as well. I mean, I think all this is going to start coming together in the next 5 years with all the waste product that we do use. I mean, waste is very important to minimize.
Jenny, thanks, Virginia, for your call. Jenny on Facebook asks, following up the comments with regards to the question of insect populations, it was implied that chemicals and pesticides were responsible for decreases in the population of wild insects like bees. What wasn't mentioned was the threat and devastation of disease or mites that impact bee populations greatly. How do those who raise insects and bugs ensure quality and health for insects raised in captivity?
Yeah, it's tricky. I raise a lot of my own insects, again, because I have a lot of animals to feed. And really, it's hygiene, it's cleanliness, it's staying on top of things. I mean, there's certain things it's hard to avoid, because mites can come in from anywhere. You don't necessarily have to bring something in. They come in from outside. But mites are very specific a lot of times on what they feed on. So bee colonies might be a little more sensitive. So compared to like a cockroach colony, I'm probably the only person in Lewiston, Maine that brags about raising 9 species of cockroaches. Usually I don't have a problem with the colonies. They pretty much self-sustain, just keep the cages clean and give them a good quality feed. And they're roaches. They're going to breed.
So we just have a few seconds left. You've already told us, Drew, that you like your bugs raw. Zach, what would be a good starter bug and starter recipe? And I'm going to ask you, Bill, the same thing, but just a few seconds. What would you do for somebody, recommend for someone who's never tried this?
Honestly, if you never tried bugs before, I'd say the crickets, the roasted crickets. You can do a lot of different things. My experience, what I've been doing lately, Southeast Asia is known for using rice powders in a lot of their salads. Actually, I've been actually grinding the crickets up that I have been given by Bill to experiment with recipes. It's actually a good thickener as well to kind of bind things together, kind of like cornstarch.
Okay. And Bill, what about you? What would be a good first recipe to try?
As far as a recipe goes, I'm not a chef, so okay. I'm going to suggest ingredients. And one of them, as Zach mentioned, is cricket powder, because you can use cricket powder. If you put it into flour, 1/4 cricket powder, 3/4 flour, you can bake with it. And
all
so
right.
Now you have high-protein cookies.
All right. Thank you guys so much. That was Bill Broadbent, CEO of Ento Sense. Zach Pratt, co-founder of Boba, and which is a Southeast Asian restaurant in Lewiston, and Drew Desjardins, educator and owner of Mr. Drew and His Animals Too. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, ideas for things to do this summer in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.